just not in a big lump at the beginning. In fact, I don't see why the story needs to be in any particular order. We're mates now. You'll have to take me as you find me. I also like books with lots of short little sections, bite-sized to suit the busy lifestyle common to so many people in this, the 21st century. Can I just make a brief point about modesty? I really like modesty. I respect it. Modesty in others draws me to them. A lot of people would regard me as a winner, but for the first 30 years of my life, as my mate's girlfriend instinctively recognised, I was a loser. 30 years is a long time. I still think like a loser. I still move like one. I'm okay with that. Losers are often very nice people. Well, compared to winners. Unfortunately, the nature of autobiography means I have to talk about myself at length. I'll have to say, I did this and I said that. Sorry. Worst of all, I'm going to have to quote my own jokes. Now, as much as I love hearing them quoted by others, it is impossible to quote your own gags without sounding like a tosser. What can I do? I'm stuck with it. People ask me why I became a comedian. Well, I've been making jokes for as long as I can remember. Not necessarily good jokes, but jokes nevertheless. I get endless joy from this process. Whether it's on telly being watched by 10 million viewers or small talking to a stranger in a lift, my greatest joy is to crack a good gag and get the right response. When I still lived in Birmingham, I dated a stunningly attractive woman. I'd been seeing her for about 3 weeks when I finally asked her where she lived. Turns out she dwelt in what was at the time a very rough block of flats called Bath Court. I said in what I felt was a slightly Wildean tone, "The trouble with Bath Court is that the residents spend a good deal more time in the latter than they do in the former." "Where's the latter?" she asked. I knew then that our love could never flourish. On another occasion, I was wandering around Speaker's Corner with a mate one Sunday morning, and we stopped to listen to a bearded man singing the praises of the Muslim religion. Soon he switched to a pretty aggressive attack on Christianity. During this, a black man in a yellow cagoule arrived on a mountain bike. He dismounted and stayed at the rear of the crowd, leaning on the bike. Then he began heckling the Muslim speaker, correcting biblical misquotations and challenging theological points. The Muslim kept beckoning the heckler forward, but he was clearly quite comfortable where he was. Eventually, the exasperated Muslim stepped down from the stage and walked towards the heckler to continue the debate. "There you are," I said to my mate. "If the mountain bike won't go to Muhammad." If a son of mine had played football for England, I don't think I could have been more proud. My mate actually applauded. This is why I became a comedian. And yes, these two stories show why I love that mate more than I ever could have loved that stunningly attractive woman. I didn't begin my comedy career until I was 30. People have been telling me I should be a comic since I was about 6, but in a way, I already was a comic. I used to perform in the classroom, then in the pub, the factory, and now on telly. It's all the same thing, showing off and endlessly pursuing that holy grail, the laugh. You don't need a microphone or a camera, all you need is an audience. Mates, girlfriends, people on buses, anyone will do. It's like an addiction. Just after my dad died, me and my two brothers had the task of clearing out his house. All his clothes and little trinkets, a lock of my mum's hair, his rosary beads, photographs, the lot. We were being brave about it, but it was a desperately sad process. All three of us frightened we might find the thing that would, without much warning, leave us broken and sobbing. My eldest brother, Terry, was clearing out a cupboard and took out the remains of a cheap ornament that my dad had an affection for. Originally, it was a bird perched on a branch, but it had got broken and the piece that Terry held up consisted of only the base, a branch, and a pair of bird's feet still clinging on. No doubt somewhere deep in the cupboard was the footless bird, both pieces put there by my dad with the intention of mending them one day. One of the thousands of loose ends left behind when somebody dies suddenly. I took the broken ornament from my brother, the little feet severed just above the ankle, if birds have ankles. He looked at me but didn't speak. Neither did my other brother, Keith. They looked, but they didn't speak. I did. "Lot 16, who killed Cot Robin?" I said. We laughed like we used to when we were kids sharing the same bedroom. Those of you not familiar with the old song, "Who Killed Cot Robin," will just have to trust me on this one. Anyway,